And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
WTMZ 98.9 FM, WTMZ 910 AM and 94.7 FM, W234 CD, Dorchester Terrace, Redwood, Charleston.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday with plenty to get to over the next couple of hours. Coming up, the Milwaukee Bucks are now one game away from their first NBA championship in 50 years. Plus, how much would you be willing to spend to be in the building to see your team win a championship? Also, is this the year that Georgia can finally break through? What do the Gamecocks need to do over the next couple of years to be successful as SEC Media Days begin today? And why the first couple of weeks of college football will be huge for this upcoming season? Which NFL teams are best situated for the next couple of years? Which quarterbacks in each division are the best heading into 2021? And for the Atlanta Braves, second half of the season started over the weekend, and it was the same old story. The Braves picked up exactly where they left off before the All-Star break, and we shouldn't have expected anything different. How should they handle the next 10 days? And it was a big weekend in college football recruiting as well. We'll touch on that. Big weekend for Clemson, for Oklahoma. Some big names came off the board. Get to that later on this afternoon as well. Plus, Elliot Johnson scheduled once again. Stop me if you've heard this before, but Elliot is supposed to be joining us this afternoon. Former Atlanta Brave, former River Dog. Talk some baseball with him this afternoon. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or go online to charlestonsportsradio.com. And if you click on our show page, you can leave a comment for the show there. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday as we start another work week. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? Just keeping an eye on the weather and kind of try to stay dry this week. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. Maybe crowning an NBA champion tomorrow night. In fact, that championship may be coming here to the Lowcountry. And we'll also try to catch up with Elliot Johnson this afternoon. Hopefully, third time's charm for Mr. Johnson. We were supposed to have him on Thursday, had a conflict. Supposed to have him on Friday, had a conflict. That's fine. We're flexible. He's a former big leaguer. Baseball players usually get 3 strikes. I'll tell you this much, though. Elliot was a career 122 hitter with 2 strikes. We'll see if he comes through in the clutch today. Hopefully we can have him on later on this afternoon, because I've been looking forward to that conversation. And I hope we can have it in a little bit. But let me start with this. Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Bucks, Suns. And Milwaukee gets the first road win of the series. Now, I thought Phoenix would win at home. In fact, I thought the home team would continue to win every game of this series. And the Suns would win in 7 games. Now Phoenix is in big trouble. And I will change for the first time, change my pick this series. I picked Phoenix to win the series going in. I stuck with them, certainly after they took the 2-0 lead. Once it went 2-2, I still said they're fine, they're going home. I'd rather be in Phoenix's position. But after watching these last couple of games, after seeing the Suns losing at home, after now having to deal with the Bucks heading home, I think Milwaukee ends it tomorrow night. The Phoenix Suns at this point look like a shot fighter, right? They just look like they have nothing left. I know the game on Saturday came down to the final possession there, essentially. But the Suns coughed up a big lead, and when it came down to that home stretch, they came back, right? They made it close. The Bucks almost blew a 10-point lead. But in those final moments, both Game 4, Game 5, the Bucks were the sharper team. They were the better team. They almost looked to have more energy at the end of the games. And for Milwaukee to finally win a road game, what did it take? The role players stepping up. right? The home team had won each of the first four games of this series. And as I was explaining all last week, it was fairly simple to understand why, because this is a series that's built around the road teams. It's the first time in quite a while we don't have super teams here. It's not about LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Right? It's not about Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. No, it's about Giannis and company. Giannis and a bunch of other guys. Now, Chris Middleton has done himself a real favor, putting his name on the map. Obviously, in this area, if you're a basketball fan, you know Chris Middleton. But the job he's done here in the finals has really elevated his stock throughout the NBA or just average basketball fans. He's turning himself into a bit of a household name these last couple of weeks. But entering the series, it was Giannis and the rest of them. Right? It was like Van Morrison. We talk music a lot around here. Right? Van Morrison and his original band. It was Van Morrison and them. Right? Van Morrison and them over there. Bob Dylan and his first band was called The Band. Then they went off and they had their own career and they were very good. But Bob Dylan and The Band. And, just those guys. They're The Band. They're over there. It's all about Bob Dylan and just those guys over there. That was like Giannis with the Bucks. It's Giannis and the rest of the guys, and we would always hope that they would be good enough to win an NBA final for Giannis. That's what it always came down to. We knew of Giannis's ability, but will the role players be good enough to help him over that edge, that take that final step to become an NBA champion? And especially to win on the road, that's what you need, those role players to step up. It's why the home team had won each of the first four games in the series, because the role players struggled on the road. Devin Booker would score 40 on the road and the Suns would lose because nobody else helped out. Giannis scored 40 on the road and the Bucks lost. Why? Because nobody else helped out. But Saturday, it was a different story. And that's why Milwaukee was able to take Game 5, the first road victory of the series. And the old cliche in the NBA is that a series does not begin until the home team loses. Well, then I guess this series began on Saturday and I think it ends tomorrow night when the home team tomorrow wins, that being Milwaukee. But how could the Bucks finally pull this off? How could they win on the road? Because they got the help from everybody else. Right? Chris Middleton went for 29 points. Jrue Holiday had 27. And not only that, they both shot over 50%. They were making their shots. They both made three-pointers. Jrue Holiday was 3 of 6. Middleton was 3 of 8 from beyond the arc. And Giannis chipped in with his usual 32. You know, but Brooke Lopez played pretty well. Connaughton and Portis were good off the bench. Everybody did their part. In fact, when you look at plus-minus, and there are certain analytics, certain stats, I know they don't work that great on radio. You try to limit your stats. If you listen to the show, you know I'm very analytical. I love the data. So it can be a little bit of a challenge. I try to limit the numbers I use as often as I can. Point differential, I think, is the most important statistic for a team in any sport. And plus-minus, I think, can be very important for individuals in basketball. And if you're unfamiliar, the plus-minus is just how the team did when you were on the floor. Your plus minus. You were either plus points, your team outscored that other team by X number of points when you played, or your minus points, your team got outscored when you were on the floor. And it can help show your value. Now, I've talked to NBA coaches before, and they'll tell you it's more about the rotations. They would like to see the plus minus for how guys do with other players, because it's not always their fault. If somebody has a minus, they may have done their part, but the other four players on the court didn't do theirs. So that may be the more telling stat, but we don't really have access to that information unless we're part of the team. All I can tell you is plus minus for each player. And when you look at the Bucks for Game 5, everybody was a plus. Except Giannis was actually minus 7. The Bucks got outscored by 7 points when Giannis was on the floor. And yet without Giannis, the Bucks outscored the Suns by 11, doing it on the road. So how did Milwaukee win Game 5 and essentially take a commanding lead in this series? Because the role players stepped up. Giannis played well. He always does. He had the big dunk at the end of the game after a couple of missed foul shots, but he was a minus 7. Right? The Bucks were outscored when he was on the floor. And when he was off the floor, the Bucks role players did enough that they outscored Phoenix by 11 points over the course of the game in the 7 minutes that Giannis did not play. Everyone else chipped in. Right? Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton each went for 27+. Connaughton with 14. Portis with 9. Lopez with 9. Everyone else did their part, and that's why Milwaukee was able to finally win on the road. And I should have figured eventually a road team would win. We have never had an NBA championship where the home team won every game. It's never happened. The only other time we had the home team win each of the four games was 2004 when the Pistons won the NBA Finals. But in that series, after the home team won the first four, the road team then won the next three. And you get to a certain point in the series where guys have to step up or they figure things out. They figure out the other team. And that was the case here. The home team won the first four. Then we got to game five. And finally, that's where things clicked for these role players who have been playing well, building some confidence. They know Phoenix very well at this point, and they can go have a good game on the road, such as Chris Middleton and especially Drew Holiday finally stepping up on the offensive side of the floor. Holiday has been great defensively, shutting down Chris Paul. And he finally did his part offensively. That's why the Bucks brought him in. He was supposed to replace Eric Bledsoe. And statistically, he's played just the same as Bledsoe did in the past, offensively. Defensively, was doing a heck of a job the last couple of games on Chris Paul. And then Saturday, on the offensive end, also chipped in 27. And by the way, going back to that plus-minus, the Bucks outscored the Suns by 14 points when Drew Holiday was on the floor. And it all came down to, at the very end, his steal and the lob, the alley-oop toss to Giannis. Steals the basketball away from Devin Booker, goes down, flips the alley-oop to Giannis for the and-one with 14 seconds left, and that sealed the deal. And if the Bucks go on and win this NBA Finals, I think we can look at that play as one of the bigger steals we've had in NBA Finals history. Now, I was just talking on Friday about how in this industry we can be very hyperbolic. We can be very much a prisoner of the moment, and I'm guilty of this at times. And we were having this conversation last week because of the reaction from the Giannis block, which was a great play. I don't think it was the greatest block we've ever seen, but it would be up there. Certainly would make the list. It was a great play. The impact, if the Bucks go on to win the series, the impact becomes larger. LeBron had a big block in the final 2 minutes of Game 7 of the NBA Finals. When it comes to impact, I think that has the greatest impact. When it comes to skill or toughness, I think Giannis, his block in Game 4 was a tougher play than LeBron's. Right? He was covering the pick, and then he had to go cover the roll. Right? He was covering the alley, and then he had to go block the oop on the lob to the rim and made that heck of a play. And the next day, everyone came on and said, oh, that's the greatest block we've ever seen. It's one of them. That's one of the best blocks we've seen. And I think Drew Holiday with that steal in Game 5 also is one of the biggest steals that we have seen. I don't think that's being hyperbolic. Right? I was trying to think of some of the biggest steals in the playoffs that we had over the years. And I came up with a list of five that would include the Drew Holiday steal. Think back to 1984, Gerald Henderson of the Celtics, when he stole the ball from James Worthy, set up the tying bucket, game goes to overtime, Celtics win, and they go on to win the series. Now, that was game two of the 84 finals. That kept the Celtics from falling into a 2-0 hole. Series is probably over at that point. And they ended up winning that series in seven games. So that's a big steal, because not only did it help them win an NBA Finals game, but it also played a big role in them going on to win the NBA Finals. Another well-known steal in the NBA playoffs that helped decide a champion, Michael Jordan, in his final NBA Finals. People always talk about the shot over Byron Russell. But what they may not remember was that Jordan did it on the defensive end when he stole the ball away from Karl Malone and then went down, and they hit the big shot on Byron Russell. And it speaks to Michael Jordan's ability when we talk about greatest of all time, right? It wasn't just making big shots. He made big plays on the defensive end. He stole a ball from Malone in the post. The Bulls went down. They ended up winning that game. And that led right to the victory of the NBA Finals. That helped them win Game 6, which was the clinching game. That, of course, is a huge steal. Then you go back to games that actually did not decide an NBA champion, but we always consider some of the biggest steals. You know, like John Havlicek stole the inbounds pass in, what, 1965? And you always hear that famous call, Havlicek stole the ball. My brothers and I used to make fun of it all the time growing up. We used to always joke about that. Johnny Most, chain-smoking cigarettes while broadcasting the game in the Boston Garden with that ridiculous voice he had. But he's an iconic broadcaster. And he was yelling as Havlicek stole the ball back in 65. That wasn't the NBA Finals. That was the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, the Celtics did go on to win the NBA championship that year. So that, of course, was a huge play. But it didn't happen in the NBA Finals. Much like the other one I thought of when Larry Bird, this was another one. My brothers and I, when we were growing up, we'd always get these VHS tapes. We were obsessed with sports from an early age. And so we'd go out to the store. My dad would go buy us these tapes, VHS tapes of the best plays, right? It would be a countdown. And on the same VHS tape, you get the top 10 steals in NBA history, top 10 blocks in NBA. And we'd sit there and we'd just watch it over and over again. And then we'd reenact the plays in the living room. We were obsessed. But this was another one we always made fun of. The classic Larry Bird steals the inbounds against the Pistons in 87, flips it to Dennis Johnson for the bucket. And the Celtics, that was also not in the NBA Finals. It helped the Celtics get to the NBA Finals, but they lost in the championship that year in 87. So, big play. We always think of it, the Larry Bird steal. My brothers and I used to mock it back in the day because Bird was so great but so goofy. And then you have the Jrue Holiday play the other night, which actually could help the Bucks actually win a championship, unlike Bird steal in 87. I think it may be one of the top five steals we've ever seen in terms of impact, what it means, what it could lead to. That steal that led to the Giannis alley-oop at the end of Game 5. And for the Bucks, they made the biggest plays in the biggest moment. The Giannis block in Game 4, Jrue Holiday with that steal in Game 5, that's what it takes. And if they win the NBA Finals, we'll look back at those two moments, two highlight plays in the biggest spots, saving Game 4, clinching Game 5, helping them win the NBA Finals. And looking at those two plays as two of the biggest plays we've seen in an NBA Finals. The Bucks, I think, close out the series at home tomorrow night. Meanwhile, for the Phoenix Suns, this is Chris Paul. These are Chris Paul's teams. This is what happens. Maybe you grew up and your father was like this, right? Your father was maybe a little uptight, maybe had a quick temper, right? It was always tense in the house because you knew, like, you did not want to do anything to upset your father. And back in the day, if you're of a certain age, maybe a lot more fathers were like that. Fathers nowadays, right? Parents in general are more loving today than back in the day. If you watch that 70s show, right? And Red Foreman, the father, right, had a quick temper. Was calling his son names, threatening abuse. That was kind of, back in the day, parents were a little stricter, a little tougher. And you may have had a father who was very uptight, right? Maybe he was stressed and he could snap off at any moment. I'm not talking about physical abuse, but you just didn't want to upset him. It'd get very awkward in the house when you knew your father was in a bad mood or he was upset at you. That's kind of like Chris Paul. Chris Paul is described as everybody respects him, but nobody likes him. Right? Everyone knows he's a great player. They respect him, what he's been through. He's good for every team. But that personally, right, he's a real pain to play with. And you may love your father, but you know he is a pain. He gets upset at everything I do. I got to be very careful. You're walking on eggshells around the house. And it's similar at Chris Paul. And so what happens with his teams? They get real tense. They blow series. The winning percentage of teams in the NBA when going up 2-0 in series is like 90%. 90% of teams that take a 2-0 lead end up closing out that series. For Chris Paul, it's about 60%. He has the third worst winning percentage in series when he's up 2-0. He blows a lot of series. And when you look at this series, we've kind of seen that. Phoenix jumped up to a 2-0 lead. Now they're down 3-2, and I think this series is over for Phoenix. I've done a 180. But the way they've lost, with the turnovers. Game 4, Chris Paul turned it over, they lost. Game 5, Devin Booker turns it over, they lose. Go back and look at the turnovers. They had 17 turnovers and lost in Game 4. The Bucks have been dominating time of possession. They've gotten more shots in every game. Phoenix has had more turnovers. That's how you lose games. That's how you lose series. And when you look at the plus-minus, let me reference this stat one final time. When you look at the plus-minus for Game 5, in fact, not even Game 5, let's look at the plus-minus for the entire series. Every Phoenix Suns starter is a plus. The only negative is Chris Paul. Every other starter for Phoenix, when they're on the floor, the Suns have outscored the Bucks. For Chris Paul this series, he's the only one. When he's been on the floor, the Suns have been outscored. He has a great talent. He's a great player with a great career. But Chris Paul has not played well in this series. He's coughed up a bunch of leads over his playoff career. And this is just what kind of happens with Chris Paul teams. They get tense. They get uptight. It's almost like they don't want to let down Chris Paul. Right? Just like you didn't want to let down your father because you knew he was so tough on you and he'd be real tense and you're walking on eggshells. And it would almost lead to more mistakes because you're trying to be so perfect. You're trying to do everything perfectly in the house because you know any little thing is going to set him off. He's going to scream at you, and you don't want to disappoint your father. It's always been that case with Chris Paul. Going back to the Clippers, to the Rockets, now to the Suns, his teams, not only the fact that they lose, but the way they lose. And if you watch this series, it's a lot of turnovers. Getting worse as the series goes on. Falling apart in the fourth quarter. Big moments. They've blown a 2-0 lead. They blew Game 4 on the Chris Paul turnover. They had a 16-point lead in Game 5 at home and let it slip away. The Suns are really choking this series. Unfortunately, that's nothing new for Chris Paul's teams. Why does it happen? Because I think he's like that father that makes you walk on eggshells. And you're real uptight because you don't want to disappoint him, but it almost leads to more mistakes because you're just trying to be too perfect. The Bucks lead 3-2. I think they finish it off at home tomorrow night. Coming up a little bit later on, how much would you be willing to pay to be in the building to see your favorite team finally win a championship? Because we have the data, we know how much it's going to cost Bucks fans to be there tomorrow night. And it is outrageous. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But coming up, when we come back, can Georgia finally break through? Is this the year that Georgia finally breaks through? and wins a national championship. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, is this the year Georgia can finally break through and get it done, winning a national championship? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Try to catch up with Elliot Johnson next hour, former big leaguer. Got plenty going on in college football that we'll break down throughout the afternoon. Get back to the NBA Finals coming up as well. You know, because Giannis had a great quote over the weekend, actually before Game 5, and then it played out perfectly in Game 5. But it's a great quote in terms of, you know, a great lesson for all people. And we'll get to that audio later on, plus Chris Middleton predicting the future. We'll get to that later on. We got a lot to do. But today is the start of SEC Football Media Days, which lets you know that football's right around the corner. The ACC has their big kickoff on Wednesday. Clemson has their own personal media day tomorrow, which, by the way, it's an all-day thing. Now, you know, we're not going to be there, and we're not going to cover it, but for the media members that are, it starts at something like 7:30. Dabo won't be speaking until after lunchtime, and then they have their Media Olympics, which sounds pretty fun. It's something that we always considered in minor league baseball because we would have a media day. And in minor league baseball, I think they did it the year after I left, but they did a home run derby for the media. Come in and, you know, take some swings at the ballpark after covering the team that day, after doing the interviews, talking with the coaches. It's a fun little idea. And so Clemson is having their Media Olympics tomorrow with their media day. The ACC has their media kickoff. And we're off and rolling. By the way, they're just consider themselves lucky that I won't be there tomorrow at the Media Olympics, right? Because I'd be taking away the gold and everything, let me tell you. But today is the SEC Football Media Days. Florida, Dan Mullen, head coach of Florida, is talking. Ed Ogeron's talking today. Shane Beamer's talking today for the Gamecocks. Beamer is not scheduled to talk to the media, as I understand it, till after 3 o'clock today. So we'll have any sort of audio on the show tomorrow. And I'm sure Bobby will have anything on Fan Talk this afternoon. But Beamer is talking this afternoon as part of the kickoff to the SEC Media Days. And the question that I asked off the top was, is this the year that Georgia can finally break through? Now, I know they won a national championship, but it was, you know, 40 years ago. I'm talking about the last decade here when they've been so close. When they've gotten close, couldn't quite clear that hurdle, especially under Kirby Smart. Could this finally be the year that Georgia breaks through? You know, a lot of times we can't believe something until we see it. It's what I have said has been impressive about the recruiting job done by Shane Beamer this offseason. I don't know how good these players are, but the fact that he's getting so many players to commit to a dream impresses me, because just as humans, it's kind of human nature. It's hard to believe in something until you see it. It's hard to buy into something without ever seeing it before. Those expectations, being sold on a dream. I compared it last week, right, to if a door-to-door salesman showed up, but they didn't have their product with them, and they're trying to sell you on the product without ever showing you it. You're going to be very skeptical. You want to see it first. You want to have it in your hands. You want to see it up close. You want to see it in action. You want to have an example to fall back on, or at least some sort of data, some sort of history, something. But as I look at the college sports scene, all these teams that we thought couldn't clear those hurdles are now starting to clear the hurdles. Gonzaga finally got the job done. In the NBA Finals, Giannis and the Bucks, I believe, will finally get the job done. You could even say in college baseball or just college sports in general, right? Mississippi State finally winning some sort of championship. But for years with Gonzaga, it was always, right, they were very good, they would come close, but they couldn't quite pull it off. And so we never looked at them as a serious championship contender because we never saw it before. And we thought, Gonzaga, no, right, they can't do it. This happens every year. They're very good, but they have that one loss, and we'll focus on the one loss. Gonzaga could go 35-1, right? They could be perfect heading into the NCAA tournament, get even to the Final Four, lose in the Final Four, and we'll say, yep, told you. And that team, they were overrated, Gonzaga. That happens every year. Instead of focusing on the 35 wins, we focus on that one loss where they lost to one of the best teams in the country, you know, in the NCAA tournament, close to winning a championship. And so, and I was guilty of this, but we never bought into Gonzaga until we saw it this past year. Now, moving forward, okay, now you may be willing to pick Gonzaga to win a championship. But prior to that, you're like, ah, we see this every year. Come from a weak conference. They don't play anybody. They choke every year. You come up with the different excuses. And for a long time, it was true. But eventually, they found a way to break through. And it happened here since the pandemic. Giannis in Milwaukee, same idea. Giannis was a back-to-back MVP. The Bucks were always the top seed in the East these last couple of years. Won a bunch of games, would have home court advantage. They go into the playoffs, have a great player like Giannis, and I'm guilty of this as well. Saying, yeah, but, you know, Giannis, we've never seen it before. The Bucks, they can't win a championship. They don't have a super team or they're a small market. We've seen Giannis come up short in the playoffs time and time. It can't happen. They can't win. And yet I think tomorrow night the Bucks are going to pull it off. And it's going to happen since, well, the pandemic. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Then you go to college baseball even. As I said, Mississippi State is one of the few schools, one of three schools in the Power Five that never won any sort of team championship, ever. And so anytime they'd get close to anything, you could always point to that. Like, yeah, but you know, they never win anything. They always choke. They find a way to come up short. They finally got a championship. And also did it since the start of the pandemic. Again, for whatever that's worth. Maybe because of the pandemic, it has opened up maybe a little more, if you want to say parity, or just a little more of an opportunity for some of these other teams. You could even point to the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers have won plenty of World Series, but they were also in a 32-year drought and were choking, quote-unquote choking, coming up short every year. They would reach the World Series and lose. They would reach the NLCS and lose. And so even this past year, in that shortened season, with the Dodgers having the best team on paper, not a lot of people bought in. Because the idea was, right, well, we see it every year. The Dodgers always come so close, but they can never pull it off. This team, they don't know how to win a World Series. They can't win a World Series. They always have such great talent, they can never get it done. Dave Roberts isn't a great manager. And then the Dodgers did win the World Series. And again, doing so since the start of the pandemic. So I say all that to then lead to Georgia. Could Georgia be the next team on that list? We're year in and year out, it seems like the only thing that's leaving us, and I say us, the collective, maybe you don't fall into that category, but there's a large portion of the collective us that probably feels that way, that you look at Georgia and you say, yeah, they're the second best team in the SEC. They got tons of talent. Kirby Smart seems to be doing a good job there. And when it comes to trying to pick them to win a national championship, I've been guilty of this as well. Right? What do you say? What's the number one reason holding you back? Well, we just haven't seen it before. Right, they come up short every year. They always blow it. They can't clear that hurdle. They can't beat Alabama. Is this the year they'll finally get it done? Also, since the start of the pandemic. Because when I look at Georgia on paper, I do think on paper, entering the season, they have the best quarterback in the SEC in JT Daniels. I think Bryce Young will be just fine at Alabama. I think Matt Corral will have a big year at Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. There will be other quarterbacks that step up. Right, Dan Mullen at Florida, after the job he did with Kyle Trask, I wouldn't be surprised. If we're talking about Florida's quarterback, probably Emory Jones at the end of the year. If you're a Gamecock fan, you certainly hope that somebody like Luke Doty steps up, has a big year. There'll be other guys that will play better than we're anticipating heading into the season. But right now on paper, I'd put JT Daniels number one at the quarterback position. Then Georgia, who always has a great rushing attack, is returning their five top rushers from a year ago. And even with the George Pickens injury at the wide receiver position, they're returning their top seven pass catchers from a year ago. They're returning 8 of 11 starters on offense. The defense is missing quite a few pieces. But offensively, on paper, really good team. And we had Michael Collins on the show last week from FanSided, who covers Georgia. And he was talking about the Bulldogs and how good they are with JT Daniels. And he said, right, if they had JT Daniels instead of Jake Fromm a few years ago, they would have been national champions. This is the quarterback that they need. And we know nowadays it's so much about quarterbacks. So as I look at this team, maybe some questions about defense. But defense has become less important, and Kirby Smart is also a defensive guy. But when you look at the Georgia team, at least on paper, look at their division. All right, most people think Florida will take a step back this year, and then who else do you have? Who's the third best team? What, Kentucky? Missouri? All right, who else is going to challenge Georgia in that division? So they'll be there at the SEC title game, assuming they can beat Florida. And then they'll be in the SEC championship game against Alabama. And they'll probably be a top five team in the country. Right? And we'll be talking about Georgia potentially winning the championship, but the fallback will be, yeah, but they choke every year. And I'm sure I'm going to say this throughout the season. But that's my biggest concern right now for Georgia. I'm more concerned about that than the quarterback. I'm more concerned about that than the wide receivers or the running game. It's just the fact that they haven't been able to clear that hurdle. I'm also not the biggest Kirby Smart fan. I think those go hand in hand. I don't think he's the best X's and O's coach on a Saturday. I think he's a great recruiter, one of the best recruiters. I don't know how good he is in terms of in-game adjustments, X's and O's, out-coaching somebody on a Saturday. And that kind of goes hand in hand. We all remember the famous decision on the fake punt when they had Alabama on the ropes a couple of years ago. But Georgia has always gotten so close, hasn't quite pulled it off. And that's the number one reason why we always doubt them every year. Could this be the year they finally break through? Because we felt the same way about Gonzaga. We felt the same way about Giannis and the Bucks. Maybe just Mississippi State as a whole for the Dodgers for the last couple of years. You usually have to see something to believe it. But eventually it's going to happen. Right? The first time it's going to happen. There's always a first. Like, I'll take you into my own personal experience. Because I always reference that I worked in minor league baseball. And in minor league baseball, it could be really frustrating. I've talked about this with a lot of other broadcasters. For some reason, all these other people think that I've gotten to a certain position in my life that they love to reach out and ask for advice and talk to me, and I'm always willing to help. But whenever I have talks with other broadcasters, we share a similar experience in that when you're trying to break into this industry because it's so competitive, especially in minor league baseball, teams are always looking for experience. They'll say all these great things about you, but the but is experience. Right? Oh, you sound great on tape. I think you could be, but, you know, we're looking for somebody who has experience leading a media department in minor league baseball. And when I was first trying to break in, the amount of times I heard that from teams, and my rebuttal was always, well, how am I going to gain experience unless someone's going to take a chance on me? And I've said this to a lot of others when we've had a conversation, because I've talked to many other broadcasters who get very frustrated by that response from employees. They say, yeah, you know, we're interested, but we're looking for someone with experience. And if you say that to everybody who doesn't have experience, well, they'll never gain experience. How can you gain? It's like a double-edged sword. You're looking for somebody with experience, but you never want to hire anybody who doesn't have that experience. So how can they gain the experience they need to get the job? It's like a never-ending cycle. Right? You can never break in to get the experience you need to then get the jobs. And the reason why I bring this up is because eventually there always has to be that first. There has to be that team to become the first, willing to take a chance on somebody that doesn't have experience. All right? How do you gain experience doing something? Yeah, you could practice on your own if possible. But how do you gain experience doing a certain job? Usually because somebody gives you a chance to gain that experience. And until that happens, of course, you're not going to have the experience. But somebody has to be the first. And I bring that up because I try to compare that then to these sports teams of Gonzaga, when we talk about them trying to win a championship, or Georgia, or the Dodgers recently. And it's like, well, we've never seen it before. But at a certain point, it's going to have to happen. Right? In order to believe in it, to be able to see it, to believe in it, it has to happen. You have to be able to see it. So you won't see it coming. And then it occurs. Like, eventually, you're going to have to get that first championship. At a certain point, it's going to have to happen. Right? Like, you can't believe in it until you see it. But then you don't see it coming because you're not going to believe in it until it happens, if you understand what I'm trying to say. And it was the same idea with minor league baseball. Like, you tell me I need experience, but you won't give me the opportunity to have experience. We won't buy in a team until we see them winning a championship, but then, therefore, you won't see the championship coming until it happens. And then you can buy into them. So it'll sneak up on you. It'll surprise you. And maybe that'll be Georgia this year. Coming up, speaking of college football, why the first couple of weeks will be huge for college football this season. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. 7, 6. Commencing countdown, engines on.
Coming up, first couple of weeks of the college football season could be huge this year, and I'll explain why. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We could have used this song a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about going to space.
Last week, actually.
Was that last week? Yeah. All these days and weeks blend together. Talking about Richard Branson. Yeah, that was a week ago today. I read this story, speaking of which, that Ashton Kutcher actually had a ticket on one of those flights, but then backed out. I think he said I think it was a change of heart, or maybe he wanted somebody else to go. I don't know. But it was $250,000. He became the 500th person to buy a ticket for it. Back in 2012, see, I've missed all this. I had no idea this was going on that long. He bought a ticket in 2012, but apparently he's backed out. He's not going to go now.
Well, Branson started this company back in 04.
Oh, wow.
So he's been at this for quite a while.
Yeah, I guess so. See, I had no idea. And he was, in 2012, when Kuchar bought his ticket, that was the 500th person to buy a ticket. So, yeah, these ticket sales have been going on for a while. He said, when I got married and had kids, my wife encouraged me that it was not a smart family decision to be heading into space when we have young children. So I ended up selling my ticket back to Virgin Galactic, is what Ashton Kutcher said. I saw that over the weekend, that story. So he's out. I'm curious what the first who the first celebrity will be to take one of those flights. And depending on what you think, maybe they wouldn't even be going to space. Got into that a week ago. You can find it on demand. College football. We're having the media days start up this week. In fact, Big 12 had their media days last week. The SEC, they're going through it this week. Clemson's going through it this week with the ACC. College football is right around the corner. First couple of weeks of college football will be huge. You know, I've been clamoring for years, and I'm not the only one, but a lot of college football fans have been saying, put great games at the beginning of the season. That's why Joe wants the Palmetto Bowl, right? He wants Clemson, South Carolina at the beginning of the year. Put your good games at the beginning of the season, and let's jump right into this thing, because college football has at least a week, probably about 2 weeks, of a head start on the NFL. And they always give us the cupcake games early because these teams want to ease into their schedules. So they begin with a Florida Atlantic or a South Carolina State or a Mercer. They play those teams early on. And then by the time we get to the good games, now you're competing with the NFL anyways. Give us some good games early on. And they've started to do it a little bit, right, in earnest these last couple of years. But this year is really interesting in college football. The first couple of weeks could be huge in college football this year. Now, I've been kind of banging the drum, I guess. More as a warning. It's not something I'm trying to predict or say is going to happen. It's more that I'm giving you a heads up. Keep your eye out on this. That this year in college football, if there was ever a chance to have some parity. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but again, just open your eyes to it so that you're not too surprised if it does happen. If there's ever a chance for parity, it could be this year with the amount of turnover at the top of the sport. Now, these are great programs because they always get great talent and therefore can replace the good players that they lose. But if a quarterback stepping in at one of these programs isn't quite up to snuff, then that program could take a step back, whether it is Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, maybe even Georgia with JT Daniels. Maybe he's not as good as we think. Texas A&M, even Notre Dame. A lot of schools replacing quarterbacks. Florida, so on and so forth. Right, a lot of new quarterbacks out there, and it's the most important position. Which leads me to the first couple of weeks of the college football season, because while these teams are going through that transition, there's also some big games on the schedule. Now, if you look at the odds, I was reading this this morning. I found this really interesting, just a little bit of a sidebar before I get to my main point. The team that is being bet the most for the over in Vegas, just in general, not to win a national championship, but to hit the over on their win total, it's actually Arizona State. More money has come in on Arizona State to hit the over than any other team. Arizona State's over-under is at 8.5. I don't know, maybe it's because of this cheating scandal in the offseason. People are really buying into Arizona State now. I do think they were going to have a good year, but I'm surprised that that's the most bet over. 8.5 wins for Arizona State, that's the most bet over. The under that's been bet the most, Auburn. Bettors are betting against Auburn more than any other team. Their over-under is 7. And more people are taking that under than any other under. So Auburn is the team that people are betting the under on the most. Arizona State, the over the most. But if you look at the odds to win a national championship, no real surprises. Alabama, number 1. Clemson, number 2. Ohio State, 3. Oklahoma, 4. Georgia, 5. Your usual suspects at the top 5. But the reason why I tease this, that the first couple of weeks could be huge in college football, is because look at these teams in particular and the games that they play early in the season. In fact, let's start by taking the 4 playoff teams from a year ago. Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson. Well, we know Clemson begins the year with Georgia. Neutral site, top 5 opponent, new quarterback for Clemson, right? Some new pieces just in general. Going on the road, Georgia, I always tell you, week 1 is the biggest toss-up in football every year. There's a chance for, well, one of those teams is going to lose. Of course, Clemson or Georgia is going to lose week 1. So you're already talking about 2 of the top 5 teams for national championship odds two of them matching up week one, one of them is going to come out with a loss right away. And then you look at the other teams from last year's playoff. Well, Alabama, they have Miami week one. Now, I don't think they're going to lose to Miami. I don't think they'll be all that tough of a game. I think they blow out Miami. But where my concern would be for Alabama would be week three. So a little bit later into the year, but still September. They have to go to Gainesville week three. They go to Florida. I don't think Florida will beat Alabama. But Alabama will have a new quarterback early on in his career. They get Miami week one. Then they get some sort of cupcake week two. And then they get Florida on the road week three. You jump right in to the SEC schedule. Meanwhile, for Florida, they play two cupcakes. They play two Florida teams, two like FCS schools in Florida, like Florida Atlantic and somebody else, whoever. They play two schools in the first 2 weeks, Florida, to gear up for game three. And granted, Florida will have a new quarterback as well. And it's Alabama. But they're coming to town at Florida. Florida has the easy cakewalk to that game. Alabama has to at least play a Miami week one. Then 2 weeks later, they go to Florida. I don't think Alabama loses, but if there was a chance, I mean, Alabama's starting the year, taking on Miami at a neutral site, then an easy game, then you go to Florida. And they're breaking in a new quarterback and a lot of other new pieces, as they do every year. Alabama will be just fine. But again, just to open your eyes, that if there was a case to be made, if there was ever an opportunity for some upsets, some surprises, it could happen there. Ohio State begins the year with Minnesota jumping right into conference play. Ohio State will have a new quarterback. Minnesota is actually the most experienced team in the country. What do I always say? Week one, biggest toss-up. So if there was ever a time to pull off an upset, to pull off a surprise, week one, you're the most experienced team if you're Minnesota, right? You guys are coming back. They're ready to go. Ohio State, you're replacing a few guys, including your quarterback, who hasn't taken a snap yet. Week one, conference game, biggest toss-up. Maybe one side's not ready to jump in just yet. Minnesota, if there was ever a team that could be ready, it could be them, most experienced team in the country. Then you get to Notre Dame. Notre Dame has to play Florida State. Florida State brought in Mackenzie Milton. So you have a new quarterback, which may make things tough for Florida State to break him in, transfer quarterback, and I think he was ranked as the best transfer quarterback this year. So Florida State adds him. Year two of Mike Norvell, you hope that they're a little bit better in year number two. Maybe not much tape on him in that system. Notre Dame could be a little caught off guard. And meanwhile, week one, all right, biggest toss-up. Notre Dame is breaking in their new quarterback. I don't think Florida State's going to be great this year. But if there was a chance for a surprise, you could catch Notre Dame early as Florida State. Then you get to the other teams, just outside the top four from last year's four playoff teams. Right, Georgia has the fifth best odds to win the national championship this year. Well, they're playing Clemson week one, so that's self-explanatory. Iowa State has the sixth best odds to win the national championship this year. They have to face Iowa week two. Iowa, always a tough matchup. In fact, as good of a coach as Matt Campbell is, Iowa State, they're 0-5 under Matt Campbell against Iowa. So Iowa State is a popular pick to make the playoff or to potentially compete for a national championship this year. What if they begin with a loss against Iowa out of conference? Then they still have to try to get past Oklahoma. Right? Or maybe even a Texas. So when you look at some of the top teams in college football, the beginning of the season is where you want to get them. It's like a power pitcher. You want to get him in the first inning before he settles in. You have teams going through changes. Some guys may not quite be ready yet. It's why week one's always the biggest toss-up. Guys are still getting into midseason form. Overall, you may be a good team, but you know, one of your starting cornerbacks may be a little weak to begin the year. Maybe a little vulnerable over there, whatever it is. And you have the top teams in college football that aren't really easing in with some cupcakes this year. Finally, we're getting some great games early in the year. And there's a chance for a few surprises, some upsets, what have you, to disrupt college football this year. If there was ever a chance, could be 2021. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Ben, lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Bang, bang, shoot 'em up, destiny. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up to the moon. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up, one, two, three. One, two, three, four.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We're into, we got a little space routine going here. Got some space songs going on.
Although I don't think this is what Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos have in mind. You know, dueling it out with each other in space.
Yeah, well, you never know. Hey, you talk about some billionaires and such.
Kind of reminds me of the James Bond movie, Yeah, the one where he went up into space.
Bond went into space?
Yes, he did.
I never saw that one. Was it good? Or was it kind of like a jump the shark moment?
No, it was pretty good. Moonraker.
Moonraker. Never heard of it. That's like...
That was the second one with Jaws.
Oh. So, like, what era did that come out in?
It was around 1980, and of course, okay. That was the height of the late 70s, early 80s sci-fi craze.
Yeah,
so they cashed in on that.
Well, years later, I love the Friday the 13th film series, and they sent Jason into space. That was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But that came out in like 2002, so that was much later on. But they sent Jason into space, which was a complete joke. The whole idea about the Friday the 13th film series is that he's at the lake.
I'm waiting for these Fast and Furious movies to eventually make their way up there. You know, these people from who have no background in the space program will, you know, instantly know how to, you know, fly a spaceship.
Yeah,
they'll be racing.
They'll be racing in space. That's what will happen with Fast and Furious. They'll be in spaceships racing each other now. We've seen 10 movies now. It's gotten old, the whole racing in different streets throughout the world. Now you got to take it to space.
In any kind of motor vehicle, you know, you could think of, they just know how to drive it instantly.
Of course.
Don't even need the owner's manual or anything.
Just throw some NOS in there, you're good to go, and they take off. Coming up, which quarterbacks, which divisions? No, let me phrase this a better way. I only speak for a living, I should know how to say these things. Which division, which teams have the best quarterbacks of each division? That's what I want to say. As we get ready for the NFL season, which teams in each division have the best quarterback? We'll get to that coming up. Plus, we'll try to link up with Elliot Johnson. And one tradition in baseball needs to stop. Get to that as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.